Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Atheo Brain. Today, I'm joined by one of my close friends, an advocate for more ethical use of AI. He has been featured in the national media, in CNN, NPR, and many more for his activism and advocacy for algorithmic justice. Here's Kash Rajesh. Kash, welcome to the Atheo Brain podcast. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ash. Excited to engage in this conversation about tech policy and algorithmic justice today.
Great. So before we get started, could you introduce yourself a little more to the audience and tell us more about your passion for activism in this space and also about ENCODE Justice?
Yeah, of course. So hi, everyone. I'm Kash, a rising senior from Chicago, Illinois. I've been incredibly passionate involved in the tech policy space for a few years now. Initially starting off with the rise of facial recognition technology used by law enforcement, and you know, lately our society is beginning to awaken to the dangers of AI, bias, disinformation, and labor displacement. And so I've slowly gotten my hands a little bit dirty in the space of technology, and working with, you know, different levels of government, civil society organizations, and other civic partners to better develop regulation and framework for how we can all collectively use technology for greater good, while minimizing harms like bias and misinformation. So ENCODE Justice is an international youth-led coalition in which I serve as the global chapter director of. And so in that organization, I essentially oversee 40 plus regional organizing hubs, which all work to tackle the issue of algorithmic injustice and work to align technology with human-centered values. So, yeah.
That's so interesting. I have some discussion questions that we could talk about. Is that something you want to do?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So I guess one of the first questions that we could talk about is, how would you define ethical AI, and why exactly is it important in today's technological landscape?
Yeah, so a term synonymous for ethical AI is human-centered AI. And so human-centered AI is essentially technology that aligns itself with moral good human values. And so when you're like breaking down this term, it's important to see like, okay, like ethical is something that means that like morally it has a just purpose or has a good purpose and seeks to better the lives of humans. Right now, what we see around us today, the technologies that we see around us, for example, generative AI, let's take that for example, in a way it's ethical because we're using it to supercharge and accelerate our thinking process. In another way, I think generative AI can be unethical because it's devaluing literary pursuits in the sense that it may, you know, promote misinformation or promote hateful speech or hateful rhetoric. And so when you're defining ethical AI, I think the most easy or like simple way to define it is basically a technology that promotes good, that promotes like moral human good values in society, and it's used for just purposes. And so it's important in today's technological landscape because, you know, we see the potential of AI to drive positive impact in areas like healthcare and education. And advances in AI also poses risks. So AI in the past few years has quietly disrupted criminal justice, healthcare, housing, and almost every other zone of public life. And our generation, you know, young people, we know a new human experience in which social media algorithms are designed to keep us addicted. AI-powered tools wrongfully flag us for plagiarism and surveillance cameras in circular schools. And so we see this growing prevalence of technology, and it's up to this next generation of leaders to really work to regulate technology in a way that it's defined as ethical and that it's really used in a moral way, promoting, you know, good actions.
Yeah. So I guess going back to that, the idea that you had about generative AI, do you think generative AI like ChatGPT, do you think that's something that will be beneficial for education, or do you think it's something that will undermine education?
Yeah, I think it's completely dependent on the way that ChatGPT and technology is like used. So like when you're looking at, and it's like completely up to the students to define like, is this helping me on campus and schools, or is it hurting me? So for example, we've suddenly all these like so much talk about AI has come after like the launch of ChatGPT and OpenAI, right? We've seen so many people, you know, there's so much hype about it. So many children are so excited to just get their hands dirty with ChatGPT and begin actually exploring the vast amount of information and data that it can provide, you know, users with. And so I think right now people are using it almost in an unethical way because it's kind of hindering students' educational abilities and actually proving themselves in school and in classrooms because it's like this new technology. They're not sure how to really use it. And so they're using it to maybe cheat on their essays or maybe substitute for their hard work and substitute for the effort that they're kind of required to put in, and using ChatGPT as this replacement for their actual, like using their own brains. But I think as we learn to become more accustomed with this technology, with generative AI, ChatGPT, Bard, and other large language models within our daily lives, I think we'll slowly come to realize that rather than using ChatGPT as a substitute for learning, we can use it as a supplement for learning. And so essentially that means to use ChatGPT and other large language models to accelerate our thinking processes or to boost like how we go up, like use it as like an enhancement to like your learning. And so I think that once we're able to do that and we learn effectively how do you use ChatGPT in the classroom, like how can teachers use ChatGPT to create the most effective lesson plans, or how can teachers, rather than using ChatGPT to write their lesson plans, how can teachers use ChatGPT to come up with the most creative, engaging, and fun lesson plans? And so once we learn that balance of what, where, and how ChatGPT can be involved in regulating it within the classroom, that's when I think we can really maximize the best of both worlds. And until then, I think that it's definitely, like you said, it's going to be devaluing education. It's going to be undermining the quality of education for students, because I think on both parts, teacher and student sides, I think they're both going to be, for now, at least for the next few years, unsure of how to really handle this new technology.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's definitely a lot to consider around generative AI and its and how it's implemented in schools. So is there any, are there any initiatives that you guys at Encode Justice are working on? Any advocacy or anything like that around generative AI?
Yeah, so... since large language models and generative AI are particularly new, we realize that, you know, we've watched as even more powerful AI systems like ChatGPT-4, et cetera, that are relatively new, have been developed and deployed with little public oversight. And so I think the downstream consequences could be civilization changing. You know, we must abandon these this binary mode of thinking and really think about shaping current AI discourse. And so since it's particularly new, that's not something that we've focused completely on, and we've decided to turn our attention to what we define as more pressing concerns. And so while we completely agree with the sense that ChatGPT and the rise of generative AI may, you know, spread hateful rhetoric and promote misinformation, like we've seen with other social media algorithms in the past, our primary focus has continued to be on regulating AI in law enforcement, criminal justice systems. So like recidivism calculators, facial recognition systems, and biometric identification systems deployed in like law enforcement. But some of the advocacy that we've been working towards that kind of encompasses the rise of generative AI is building governance structures to audit AI products and manage risks. So we've proposed to several legislators that we've recently lobbied that we really support and encourage an independent FDA-style regulatory agency that conducts impact assessments while simultaneously stressing a proactive approach to corporate accountability. And so really what that means is with new large corporations like OpenAI, working to conduct impact assessments conducted by this new independent FDA-style regulatory agency that would actually seek to audit ChatGPT and its use in the classroom to better understand, like to answer your previous question, to better understand, is it undermining education or is it actually enhancing education? And so that's definitely something that but we've supported. And another thing that we have actually worked to operationalize is, you know, really working with existing multilateral frameworks, so including the White House's AI Bill of Rights, the UNESCO's recommendation on the ethics of AI, and OECD's principles in AI, all of which essentially set this framework, the standards for how generative AI and ChatGPT should be ethically used. But taking that to the next level and really operationalizing all of those to work together, whether it be like, you know, civil society groups, governmental agencies, making this like a combined effort to hear from different perspectives. But to answer your question, no, we haven't necessarily yet done any work on generative AI.
That's really interesting. Something else that I want to talk about regarding, I guess, your advocacy at Encode Justice around generative AI. Generative AI is a new topic that's undergoing a lot of innovation and a lot of new breakthroughs. So do you think too much government regulation or just regulation as a whole may get in the way of that innovation? Or what's your take on that?
Yeah, so there has actually been a lot of conversation on, you know, does government regulation stifle innovation? And so there has been a lot of talk about that. And so while like Encode Justice, and I'm speaking independently of Encode Justice, but obviously my perspective has been formed by my work there. While, you know, government regulation can actually, you know, like I said, stifle innovation and maybe prevent these corporations and new artificial intelligence technologies from really advancing and flourishing, I think one thing that we need to keep in mind is before innovation, before anything like that, anything of that sort, we need to take a step back and develop these technologies that align with human-centered values. And that goes back to what I said before. So we've seen technologies rapidly advancing, like you said, Yash. Like, technology, artificial intelligence soon has the capability, like artificial general intelligence has that capability, and we're getting closer and closer there, has that ability to have a consciousness of its own, a consciousness to make decisions of its own, to learn from its mistake, and have almost its own brain. And so when we're coming pretty close, and that's a whole new discussion on whether or not we've actually, artificial general intelligence is really viable. But as we're nearing that, and we've seen rapid advancements in technologies to really learn from its mistakes, to really make its own decisions based off of its own knowledge, I think it is more important for increased government regulation, because without that, these technologies could, you know, advance at a super rapid pace and almost bring this dystopian world that we've once feared of technologies and, you know, not necessarily killer robots, but like technologies in general and artificial intelligence, whether it be generative AI, whether it be facial recognition identification systems, whatever form of AI that is, to really begin taking over. And in order to prevent that, I think we need to first set these standards, first set these frameworks to redress the harms of AI, because there's something called like malicious intent and good intent. And to create technologies with good intent so that eventually, if it does become too powerful and supersedes human capabilities, that we're able to control it from whatever capacity we can. And I think that like at some point, it's going to get too advanced, it's going to become too smart for us to do anything about it. So it's, when we're in the somewhat early stages, I think that the role that government regulators should play is an increased role, increased involvement in setting these standards, because otherwise I think it could get really scary.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even with ChatGPT at school, I mean, where you can clearly see students using it with malicious intent versus with good intent. Some people might be replacing Google with ChatGPT while others are using it to forge essays. So that's, you're right, we have to strike a balance there. So are there any successful cases where regulations have been integrated into AI systems that you can think of?
Yeah. So there are a couple. The first off was the one in Illinois in 2019, the AI Video Interview Act. And so along with technology and artificial intelligence, something that comes along with this is data privacy and the personal data that's stored with these technologies and the ability of companies to mishandle that data. And so the AI Video Interviews Act is an act that essentially mandates and requires companies to video interviews that were, they're still done, video interviews conducted by like AI, so that it'll give you a prompt and you respond to it in video, and companies evaluate that. And people were afraid that companies were collecting biometric data. And so what the Video Interview Act does is it actually recycles that data after 30 days of the interview. So like your data is no longer stored. That's one aspect, that data privacy aspect. In terms of facial recognition and law enforcement, something that Encode Justice has been actively involved in is we've actually worked with local city councils and actually contributed to the passage of 3 local ordinances in certain cities across the country to place a moratorium on biometric identification tools. So moratorium is essentially a temporary ban. And so we worked on one in San Francisco, California. That was one example of government regulation to limit the presence and limit the power of facial recognition systems in San Francisco, California, in Washington State, and in Baltimore, Maryland. And so those are just 3 examples. And then something that I'm actually working on now, Yash, where I'm actually working to increase regulation of technology, is mandating impact assessments for AI-powered hiring tools. We've seen like Amazon software that disproportionately discriminates against women-sounding names, ethnic-sounding names, and these tools and these biases, this racism is baked into technology already. It's there already. It's we can't do anything about it now. The only thing that I'm saying we do is when these AI-powered tools are used, to mandate impact assessments for companies and deployers, so that we can better effectively understand, like, how is the technology being used? Is it being used with malicious intent or good intent, going back to that topic? And from there on, if it does not pass that, like, impact assessment, then there's a $10,000 fine to the Illinois Civil Rights Department. So that's a state bill that I'm working on. But aside from that, there has been other regulation, but most notably being the facial recognition limits. Another thing that's on the national level is the Algorithmic Accountability Act of 2022. So that did a lot. But one, it established an FDA-style regulatory agency, like I talked about before, to kind of audit AI products and manage these risks. And then secondly, conducting impact assessments for any tool used in the workplace. And once again, fine. So I'm working on something state level, but that was more national level. And so there have been a couple of successful cases, but, like, going back to the question before, there have been concerns about stifling innovation and maybe potentially, like, in a hard hit to revenue that's currently being generated by these companies.
Yeah. So do you think AI model, like decision AI models, do you think they could potentially help alleviate racial biases in our society? Or do you think they're going to make the problem even worse as these racial biases are being baked into the AI models?
Yeah, so I think totally they can. And we've actually done CoJustice. Our research team has actually worked on deepfake detection tools. And so deepfake technologies, to clarify, are synthetic technologies that are used to mimic a sort of public figure based off of pre-existing data that's used to kind of promote misinformation. That deepfake detection tool, essentially what it would do is it would actually identify when something is a deepfake or not. And the way that it actually works is it works using artificial intelligence technology. That's just, like, one of many examples in which AI can actually be used for good. And it can be used to counter its own self in the form of deepfake technologies. In terms of helping alleviate racism, it definitely could. It just depends on... So artificial intelligence runs on, like, the data that it's fed, right? So, like, for example, the reason facial recognition systems are biased is because, like, there's, like, a lack of representation of, like, African women, Black women, Black men, and like women in general in the data, in the data set, right? And so when it has less data on those certain groups, those marginalized groups, then the technology just runs less effectively. That's basically how it works. So to answer your question, if you wanted it to not be racist, if you wanted the technology to just not be discriminatory, what you would need to do is you would need to have equal representation and fair and just, like, fair representation of different groups that's being of data that's fed into the technology to actually make it work more accurately.
Yeah. So do you think something that you could advocate for, I guess, more ethical use of these models is maybe more fair data that's being fed to the models? So regulations on the data sets and representation.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that could be possible because, like I said, like, that's how the technology even works, right? Yeah. So that's one way, the data, but then also expanding and diversifying the workforce of software developers building these technologies. Yeah. So we see that when the tools were initially developed, a lot of the large demographic of the workforce were white men. And so the technologies were, like, inherently going to be, like, it had their own, like, human biases baked into those, right? Because the algorithm is just reflecting the data and the humans coding the algorithm. And so when you're diversifying the workforce or the people actually developing these technologies, you automatically and effectively bringing these new perspectives, and that's going to be a lot more helpful.
Yeah. So what are some of the biggest challenges or roadblocks that you've seen to implementing these AI regulations and the advocacy work that you do?
Yeah. So I think there's like multiple, so I'll, like, list two. Yeah. The first is a lot of legislators who are passing laws, governmental bodies that are regulating these technologies are, like, simply just, like, technologically illiterate. So, like, I think one really important, that's, like, a roadblock, right? Because they don't really know, like, facial recognition is harmful. They don't really know that generative AI is devaluing literary pursuits or creative pursuits. They don't really understand that the use of risk assessment calculators and recidivism rate calculators powered by AI is going to be effectively discriminatory. So they don't understand that. And I think that's because of the age gap or just because there isn't enough technical literacy in Congress. And so I think that something that's really important is we must improve technical literacy in government through programs that actually train lawmakers to govern in the age of AI. and that recruit technologies for public service. That's a roadblock. Like, we're talking to legislators. We've met with 60 plus legislators. A lot of them actually don't understand. It's like just not a topic that's, you know, it's a new topic to them. So that's one roadblock. Second roadblock is, I think that by, like, Republicans fear that by increased government regulation, it like contradicts their morals of a more like hands-off government type thing. And so that's one thing that they fear. Another roadblock is they're just afraid that maybe we're losing revenue by like regulating this technology or limiting its capacity, and that, you know, it's going to be hurting like businesses. And like we talked about before, innovation as well. A lot of them want to innovate. A lot of them want to grow and advance these technologies. But I think that's what is important is, before we advance these technologies, we need to really go back and reevaluate whether or not these technologies are really good for us, and if they're meant for, if they're like aligning themselves with human values.
Yeah. So going along the idea of human values, have you done any research work in the algorithms that like social media companies use, like TikTok or Instagram, in feeding content to users and like addiction related issues?
Yeah, so I actually have done work at the Harvard Digital Lab, in which I worked with a PhD candidate in analyzing YouTube's algorithm and actually promoting MAGA content, which is President Trump's extremist conservative movement. And so what we've seen is, during the January 6th riots and the whole election fraud, all of his conspiracy theories, alongside like MAGA extremists who have been promoting content on YouTube, we work to actually evaluate and consider through surveys and qualitative research whether or not these technologies are actually are promoting and spewing like misinformation and maybe radicalizing political beliefs. And so we feel like when users engage with a certain type of content, the algorithm is trained to promote, give them more content. And so that can obviously be dangerous, because if I'm looking up a video on how to attack the Capitol, then it might pull up insurrection video, then it might put up QAnon videos and just, QAnon videos and like more conspiracy theorist videos. And that's just gonna make me a lot more radical. And so that's something that we've worked on as well. And aside from the YouTube algorithm as well, you know, even during the pandemic, when there is this like anti-Asian sentiment, you know, during COVID, we've seen that technologies and algorithms like TikTok, Instagram, all of that are really spewing misinformation, really spewing this hateful rhetoric. And I think that it only does harm. It does us no good. And that's why it's important to really redress these harms caused by AI by doing and evaluating these products for risk.
Yeah, that was super interesting what you said about how the algorithms are feeding that content to the users. And something else, I think, especially with TikTok, when it recognizes what the user wants, it just keeps feeding the user the same content over and over again.
Yeah, like an echo chamber.
Yeah, so that could be really harmful. And I think diversifying content is really important. Anyways, that's all for today. Kosh, thank you so much for coming on the Athea Brain podcast today to speak about the importance of human-centered AI and how we can work collaboratively with civil society, governmental agencies to support the advancement of safe technology that respects human values. I'm looking forward to many more conversations, and thank you so much for participating today.
Of course.
To all the listeners, I hope you enjoyed, and I'm looking forward to having you on our next episode.